Hi, we have some exciting news. Crime House Plus and Murder True Crime Stories are celebrating America's 250th by dropping a four-part limited series on the crimes that built America. These are the crimes and cases that gave us Miranda rights, sparked criminal profiling, and a murder that built America's missing children movement. Follow Murder True Crime Stories for a new episode every Monday leading up to July 4th, or you can listen to all of them right now with Crime House Plus. To join, go to crimehouseplus.com, or if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, tap Try Free at the top of the show's page.
This is Crime House.
To ask for the death penalty, prosecutors have to be sure they have a good case. And with Casey Anthony, they had a lot of evidence in their corner. A car that smelled like death, a hair from a decomposing body, duct tape on a toddler's skull, and a mother who didn't report her daughter missing for 31 days. But when the jury came back, the country lost its mind. Today, I'll break down the shocking verdict, the evidence that never made it to trial, and why the death of Kaylee Anthony still haunts America more than 15 years later. Every crime tells a story about the people involved, the system that tried to stop it, and the nation that couldn't look away. Some cases are so shocking, so deeply woven into who we are, that decades later, we're still asking, how did this happen? I'm Katie Ring, and this is America's Most Infamous Crimes. Every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, I'll take you deep into cases that have a lasting imprint on society and still haunt us today. I want to thank you for being part of the Crime House community. Please rate, review, and follow America's Most Infamous Crimes wherever you get your podcasts. And to get all episodes at once ad-free, subscribe to Crime House Plus on Apple Podcasts. Before I get started, please be advised that this episode contains descriptions of child death and references to allegations of abuse, so please listen with care. This is our third and final episode on the death of Kaylee Anthony. Today, I'll take you through the verdict that shocked millions of Americans, the bombshell computer evidence that was discovered after the trial, the major theories about what really happened to Kaylee, and the legacy this case left behind. Once Kaylee Anthony's trial ended in the summer of 2011, the entire country was waiting to see what the jury would decide. The prosecution asked them to look at the totality of the evidence, the chloroform, the hair, the decomposition, the duct tape, the lies, and see a mother who killed her own child so she could go out and party and spend a month pretending nothing had happened. Meanwhile, the defense asked the jury to look at the same evidence and see reasonable doubt everywhere they turned. Dueling experts, circumstantial connections, a family so broken that no one's story could fully be trusted. On July 5th, 2011, after 10 hours and 40 minutes of deliberation, the jury returned their verdict. On the charge of aggravated child abuse, not guilty. On the charge of aggravated manslaughter, not guilty. On the charge of first-degree murder, not guilty. The only charges she was convicted of, 4 counts of providing false information to law enforcement. 2 days later, on July 7th, 2011, she was sentenced to 4 years in jail and fined $1,000 for each of the 4 counts. But here's the thing, just 10 days after sentencing, Kaylee was actually released from jail. She'd already been behind bars for a significant amount of time awaiting trial, and between the credit for time served and good behavior, she effectively already completed her sentence before it was even handed down. She walked out of her trial a free woman, and the country erupted. The public reaction was immediate, visceral, and overwhelming. Protests broke out throughout Florida. People were crying in the streets outside of the courthouse. CNN reported that over 1 million people watched the live stream of the verdict being read. Roughly 40 million Americans watched at least some portion of the trial over the preceding weeks. And the overwhelming consensus from the public was that Kaylee Anthony had gotten away with murder. Social media exploded with outrage. Kaylee's name became synonymous with injustice in a way that hadn't been seen since the O.J. Simpson verdict, more than 15 years earlier. People who'd never followed a criminal case in their lives suddenly had strong opinions about forensic evidence, reasonable doubt, and the failures of the justice system. The media was heavily criticized in the aftermath, too, and not just for their wall-to-wall coverage of the trial, which many felt had turned a child's death into entertainment. In August of 2008, shortly after Casey's arrest, ABC News had paid her $200,000 in exchange for the rights to use family photos and home videos of Kaylee. Casey reportedly used that money to help pay for her legal defense. So in a very real way, the media's hunger for content in this case may have directly funded the defense that helped Casey walk free. That irony wasn't lost on the public, and it sparked a broader conversation about the ethics of paying criminal defendants for access to their stories. But the question that lingered wasn't just about outrage. It was a genuine legal question. Why did the jury reach the verdict it did? And when you look carefully at the evidence, or rather at the gaps in it, the answer starts to come into focus. Because the truth is, the prosecution's case had some serious structural problems. For starters, a lot of the evidence was circumstantial. There was no DNA evidence that directly linked Casey to Kaylee's death. Casey's DNA wasn't even found on the duct tape that was found on and around Kaylee's skull. And if she was the one who put it there, you would expect at least trace amounts of her DNA to be present. Beyond that, there also weren't any eyewitnesses who could place Casey at the crime scene or directly implicate her in the act of killing her daughter. And although the autopsy ruled Kaylee's death a homicide, it couldn't establish a cause of death. And this is a significant gap in any capital murder case. You're essentially telling the jury, we know this child was murdered, but we can't tell you how she was killed, and we can't present any direct physical evidence connecting the defendant to the act. And yet, we want you to be certain enough to execute her mother. Even with all of the circumstantial evidence, that's a lot to overcome. The defense also made a compelling argument about the smell in the car. They pointed to the bag of garbage that had been left in the trunk and argued that the odor could have come from the decomposing trash rather than a decomposing body. And they effectively neutralized the prosecution's forensic witnesses by bringing in their own experts who offered perfectly reasonable alternative explanations for the chloroform, the flies, and even the heart-shaped sticker residue on the duct tape. When you have two sets of experts pointing in opposite directions, the jury is left wondering who and what to believe. And in a death penalty case, that kind of confusion works overwhelmingly in the defendant's favor. There was even a book written about the case that described an interesting experiment. The author assembled a mock jury, presented the character evidence first, the partying, the lying, the tattoo, the sleeping around, and the group was unanimously convinced Casey was guilty. But when the actual forensic evidence was presented in detail with the defense's counter-arguments, the same group became confused and uncertain. The character assassination worked on an emotional level, but the hard science didn't back up the prosecution's narrative the way they needed it to. And then there were the family dynamics, which only made things even more confusing. On one hand, you had Casey's mom, Cindy. One of the key pieces of evidence in the trial was that the word chloroform had been searched on the Anthony family's home computer 3 months before Kaylee went missing. And when Cindy was on the stand, she claimed she was the one responsible for it. Supposedly, her Yorkies kept getting tired, and she wondered if it was from chlorophyll in the bamboo they were eating in the backyard. But she confused chlorophyll with chloroform and instead searched that. Here's the problem with that, though. Records showed that Cindy was almost certainly at work when those searches were made. So it seemed like she was lying under oath to protect her daughter from the death penalty. Still, it was a moment that revealed just how far Cindy may have been willing to go to hide the truth, even if that meant putting herself at risk. Now, on the other hand, you have Casey's dad, George, who was essentially the prosecution's star witness. Even with the death penalty on the table for his own daughter, he came across as evasive and inconsistent, but not as someone who was falling on his sword for her. That disconnect between the two parents was deeply confusing to the jury. The allegations that George and Lee had both sexually abused Casey when she was younger also added an entire new layer of complexity, as well as the defense's argument that George might have helped cover up Kaylee's accidental death. The family dynamics were so unusual, so hard to interpret, that they only added to the fog of uncertainty hanging over the entire case. All of that contributed to the reasonable doubt that let Casey walk free. But a year later, new evidence came out that some people think eliminated any doubt at all. Now, here is where this story takes what might be its most devastating turn. Because a year after the trial ended, investigators made a discovery that could have changed everything. Before the trial, the sheriff's office computer forensics team had only examined searches made on Internet Explorer, the default browser on the Anthony family's home computer. But he hadn't checked the other web browser, Firefox. It was a massive oversight, one the prosecution didn't notice. And it would prove to be one of the biggest mistakes in the history of this case. When the investigators finally went back and examined the Firefox search history, they found something chilling. On the day Kaylee was last seen alive, someone in the Anthony home had searched the phrase foolproof suffocation. Then they clicked on an article that discussed killing methods, including poison and putting a plastic bag over someone's head. And here is the detail that makes this discovery so explosive. The one person in the Anthony household who used Firefox as their web browser was Casey. Think about that. On the last day anyone saw Kaylee alive, someone used Casey's preferred web browser to search for how to suffocate a person without getting caught. And the jury never heard a single word about it. Here's where it gets even wilder. The search was made at about 2:51 p.m. We know from employment records that George was at work by 3:04 p.m. that day, and his commute was about 9 or 10 minutes. That means George likely left the house no later than around 2:55 p.m., just 4 minutes after that search was conducted. Not exactly the kind of thing you look up as you're heading out of the door. After the foolproof suffocation search, the browser then showed that someone had logged onto Casey's MySpace page. So yes, it's possible that George made that search, but you tell me which one you think is more likely. Either way, it's a genuine tragedy that this evidence wasn't caught until after the trial was over, because it's arguably the single most incriminating piece of evidence in the entire case. It suggests premeditation, intent, and that someone in that home was thinking about how to kill a person on the very day a 2-year-old girl died. And the evidence was sitting right there on the family computer the whole time, in a browser that nobody on the prosecution's team thought to check. But what makes this oversight even worse is that one of the experts for Casey's defense team did catch the searches. In an interview with Casey's lawyer, Jose Baez, he was almost bragging about how they had caught it and had crafted an argument around why the search wasn't Casey's. But he was absolutely shocked that the prosecution never brought it up, and of course, he wasn't going to. Who knows what the outcome of this trial would have been if the jury had heard about that search. But when you combine foolproof suffocation with the duct tape on Kaylee's face and the evidence of chloroform in the trunk of the car, the picture becomes much harder to explain away as an accident. In my opinion, it's one of the most painful what-ifs in modern true crime history. And it raises a broader question about how we investigate cases in the digital age. In 2008, the idea that someone might use a different web browser for different activities wasn't something every investigator thought to check. Today, it would be standard procedure. But for Casey Anthony, that procedural gap may have been the difference between a conviction and an acquittal. The technology was there, the evidence was there, but the expertise to find it was not. So where does all of this leave us? What do we actually believe happened to Kaylee Anthony? There are a few major theories, and they are worth walking through one by one. The first is that Kaylee accidentally drowned while Casey was home alone. In this version of events, Casey panicked after finding Kaylee in the pool, and instead of calling 911, she covered up the death and spent the next month pretending nothing had happened. This theory explains some of Casey's behavior. The avoidance, the elaborate lies, the refusal to tell her parents. But it has a very hard time explaining two things, the duct tape that was found on Kaylee's skull and the computer search for foolproof suffocation. Neither of those facts fit into an accidental drowning narrative. The second theory is that Kaylee accidentally drowned while both Casey and George were home. In this version, George helped Casey cover up the death and the deep dysfunction in the Anthony family, The lies, the secrets, and the alleged history of abuse is what kept anyone from picking up the phone and calling the police. This is essentially the defense's theory from the trial. It accounts for George's strange behavior, his statement to his mistress about the death being an accident that snowballed, and the language in the note from his attempted suicide about blaming himself. But once again, the duct tape and the suffocation search are very difficult to reconcile with any version of events that starts with an accident. The third theory is that Casey was routinely drugging Kaylee and something went wrong. Some people believe Zanny the Nanny was actually Casey's code name for Xanax, and that she'd been sedating Kaylee on a regular basis so she could go out and party without having to worry about childcare. In this version, maybe the drugging went too far one time, and Kaylee died from an accidental overdose. Even George, Casey's own father, went public with a version of this theory at one point, telling reporters that he believed Casey had sedated Kaylee with drugs so she could go have fun. The problem with this specific theory is that the toxicology results didn't find any drugs in Kaylee's remains. Although the remains were so severely decomposed after 6 months of exposure to the Florida heat and rain, that a negative toxicology result makes it hard to definitively rule out. Whatever chemical evidence might have been there could have been destroyed long before investigators recovered the body. And then there's the darkest version, that Casey deliberately suffocated Kaylee because she did not want to be a mother anymore. This is a theory that the prosecution was essentially arguing at trial. The chloroform in the trunk, the duct tape, the Bella Vita tattoo, and the month of partying and nightclubbing while her daughter's body was decomposing in the Florida woods. Taken together, this theory paints a grim picture. Casey wanted her freedom, and Kaylee was the obstacle standing between her and the life she wanted. I think what makes this case so maddening is that every single theory has something going for it, and every single theory has at least one major hole. No single explanation accounts for all of the evidence perfectly. And at the center of it all is a family where everybody lied, everybody's story changed over time, and nobody's account can fully be trusted. And that ambiguity is a big part of why this case became such a cultural phenomenon. People weren't just watching the Casey Anthony trial because of the sensational details. They were watching because it touched on something deeply personal. Every parent who's ever left their child with someone else, every grandparent who's ever worried about a grandchild's safety, every person who's ever looked at a family and wondered what was really going on behind closed doors, this case spoke to all of those fears. It asked a question that's terrifying in its simplicity. Can the person closest to a child also be the one that harms them? And can they get away with it? But here's one thing I keep coming back to no matter which theory I am considering: the pathological lying. Casey Anthony lied about her job at Universal Studios for years. Not just a casual white lie, but a sustained deception she maintained to her friends and family. She also lied about Kaylee's father to multiple friends, telling completely different stories to different people depending on the situation. And she fabricated a story about a nanny that didn't even exist. Casey also committed other crimes during the month Kaylee was missing, stealing blank checks from her close friend and using her mother's credit card without permission. She also claimed to have spoken with Kaylee on the phone the day she finally reported her missing, which was almost certainly another lie. The list goes on and on. And when someone lies about literally everything else in their life, it becomes very, very hard to believe them about the one thing that matters the most: what happened to their child. In terms of official actions after the trial, there was one more development worth mentioning. On August 11, 2011, Florida's Department of Children and Families released a report concluding that Casey Anthony was responsible for the death of Kaylee due to her actions and negligence. In a legal sense, that's not the same as saying she committed murder, but it cast official blame on Casey from a child welfare perspective. Although it couldn't send her to prison or undo the jury's verdict, it was a statement of responsibility without any enforcement power behind it. Kaylee's death has also had a meaningful and lasting impact on legislation across the country. Various states have enacted versions of what is now known as Kaylee's Law, which makes it a crime for a parent or guardian to fail to report their child missing or dead within 24 to 48 hours, depending on the state. Florida enacted a similar law in April of 2012, making it a felony to knowingly provide false information to mislead a police officer investigating a missing child case. And if the missing child suffered great bodily harm or death, that crime is elevated further. Those laws exist directly because of Kaylee Anthony. Because of those 31 days when nobody picked up the phone and reported that a 2-year-old girl was gone. After the trial, George and Cindy briefly ran a nonprofit organization in Kaylee's memory called the Kaylee's Fund Foundation. But it was dissolved in May of 2012 after less than a year of operation. Whatever its intentions, the organization couldn't survive the weight of the family's fractured relationships and public scrutiny. In recent years, Casey has become completely estranged from her family. Her parents reportedly believed she's struggling with her mental health, and her father, George, has said he wants no contact with her. The family that once lived together on Hope Spring Drive, the house where Kaylee took her first steps, where she splashed in the pool with her grandmother, and where she was last seen alive, has been shattered in every way possible. Casey wasn't allowed to attend her own daughter's memorial service, but her mother, Cindy, addressed her there anyway. She said, quote, "She got your beauty and your compassion. She had your spirit and she will always love you. She knows that she was loved by her family and that's all that's important. In the end, no matter what anyone believes happened, one fact remains, Kaylee Anthony is gone." If she were alive at the time of this recording, she would be turning 21 soon. She would probably be in college somewhere thinking about the next chapter of her life, what career she wanted to pursue, who she wanted to spend her time with, what kind of person she was going to become. All the ordinary, beautiful questions that a young woman gets to ask herself as she steps into adulthood. Instead, no one will ever know where Kaylee's life might have taken her. And no one has ever been held accountable for taking that life away. That is the part that stays with you long after the trial transcripts are closed and the news cameras are packed up. It is the fact that a 2-year-old little girl who woke up laughing instead of crying, who stole her grandmother's heart the moment she was born, who loved her family and was loved fiercely in return, is gone. And there is no justice for her. There never has been. And worst of all, a woman the majority of the world believes killed her own daughter is out there walking free and making money telling her side of the story. At the end of each episode, I like to take a moment to answer any questions you may have about the case and share my thoughts, so make sure to comment below.
Do you agree with the jury's verdict?
Do I agree with it? No. Do I understand it? Yes. I think the prosecution absolutely dropped the ball in this case. When you sit down and really look at the evidence the jury had in front of them, not what we know now, but what they saw in that courtroom, I can understand how they got there. The prosecution was asking for the death penalty, which is the highest possible standard, but they weren't able to prove how Kaylee actually died. The defense did a great job of sowing doubt through every aspect of the prosecution's case. They provided an alternate story about the accidental drowning that jury members said they couldn't completely count out. They also gave alternate theories or poked holes in the forensic evidence in the case as well. When evidence is being contradicted by defense experts at every turn, when there's no DNA tying the defendant to the murderer, no known murder scene, and no official cause of death, that is a tough hill to climb. One of the jurors in an interview afterwards said that they were sick to their stomachs finding her not guilty because many believed she did it, but they believed under the definition of the law and beyond a reasonable doubt that the prosecution didn't put together a strong enough case. And as I mentioned earlier, I think the missing search history was a huge part of that.
Yeah, the computer search is the one that really gets me. How does something like that get missed?
It was such a critical error, and the fact that they only checked Internet Explorer and not Firefox is such a basic oversight that it is almost hard to believe. And when you realize that the foolproof suffocation search was made on the day Kaylee was last seen alive, that Casey was the Firefox user in the household, and that her MySpace was logged into right after the search, the significance is pretty staggering. If the jury had heard that combined with the duct tape and the chloroform, I think there's a real chance that the verdict would have been different. And the fact that the defense apparently knew about it and was ready to counter it makes it even more frustrating because it was right there
and it slipped through the cracks, and that's how they lost this case. What do you think actually happened to Kaylee?
The sad truth is that we will never know, and we can't even really take educated guesses because there is not much evidence proving the cause of her death. I feel like the Xanax theory makes a lot of sense. If you look at the videos of Casey with Kaylee, as well as the testimony from everyone who saw their relationship, I do think Casey did love Kaylee, but I think there is also part of her that missed her old lifestyle. So I could see her using drugs to put her to sleep so she could go out and enjoy her life. But then I also watched her interviews and documentary, and the only time she really cries or gets emotional is when she is talking about herself and how everything has affected her. And then there are also the searches for foolproof suffocation and chloroform, which both blew my mind because how stupid do you have to be to look those both up? So then I think maybe it really was premeditated. What I do believe either way, though, is that she is responsible. Even just not reporting your child missing for 31 days, then partying, getting a Bella Vita tattoo, and pretending like nothing happened should have been at minimum child abuse and neglect. But really, I think the most devastating question we are left with is why? If she wanted to just go back to her life, why didn't she just leave Kaylee with her parents?
It's also wild that Casey was essentially the only real suspect. Do you think the investigation should have looked harder at anyone else?
I watched Casey's documentary where she blames everything on George, and I think Casey is a pathological liar, and I am shocked that two separate psychiatrists who evaluated her said that she had normal results in her mental evaluations. That said, there is something about George that I can't quite put my finger on, and I wish they did at least look into him a little more. To me, it felt like he inserted himself into the investigation a little too much. And again, I don't think George did it, but if they looked into him more, even took his phone for analysis, proved that his location was at work when those searches happened, and tracked his location to see if he was ever near where Kaylee's body was discovered, it could have made their case more solid because Jose Baez telling the jury a story about how he might have been involved is really what I believe got Casey off. But again, unfortunately, nobody will ever know the full truth. And at the end of the day, what really matters is that a beautiful baby girl who is full of life is now gone. Thanks so much for joining me for this episode. Make sure to rate, review, and follow America's Most Infamous Crime so we can keep building this community together. And to get all episodes at once ad-free, subscribe to Crime House Plus on Apple Podcasts. Come back next week for another deep dive into a true crime that changed America.